Hi, welcome to the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I am Dara Cass, the editor-in-chief of Feminem.
And I'm Jenny Beck Esme, the other editor-in-chief of Feminem. And we have a really exciting podcast for you today. We are being joined by two researchers and colleagues of ours from the University of Chicago, Dr. Vinnie Arora and Dr. Anna Muller, not Mueller, Muller, just like another famous Muller we know. And they're going to be talking about some really interesting stuff.
So why don't you guys introduce yourselves? So let's start with Anna. Anna, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe your uncle, Bob.
I'm hoping will come through for us. So I'm a medical sociologist here at the University of Chicago. I'm in the Department of Comparative Human Development, and my research focuses on gender inequality in medical education and also on mental health.
So you will be a frequent person to guest host on the Feminem podcast, since everything you do, everything we talk about.
That would be exciting.
All right. And Vinny?
Yes, it's great to be here on Feminem. I've heard and just enjoy the Twitter community and so much. And I'm just thrilled to be able to talk about some of our work. I'm actually a medical educator and a researcher at the University of Chicago. I direct innovations in graduate medical education. And so that's sort of what led to some of the work that we will present here and some of the line of inquiry around these issues.
Okay, so we're going to actually start off a little bit with what's going on right now and then talk a little bit afterwards about where we've come from. So we want to talk about a paper that you guys actually just put out. It's called Gender Differences in Attending Physicians' Feedback to Residents, a Qualitative Analysis. And this was actually just published in the Journal of Graduate Medical Education in October of 2017. Now, normally when we do this podcast, one of us will summarize the paper. But since we have the authors on the podcast today, we figured that we would start with the lead author, the first author, Dr. Muller. So why don't you tell us a little about this paper, since it was all about emergency medicine?
All right, yeah. So this paper comes out of a pretty interesting collaboration here at the University of Chicago between a group of medical sociologists, which I led, and a group of doctors, which Vinny led. And, essentially we're interested in understanding how gender inequality in medicine more generally is produced. And we have this really unique and I think important opportunity to study emergency medicine. You guys are probably very aware of the fact that women still lag behind men in emergency medicine, a little bit more than in some of the other subspecialties of medicine. And so in a past study, Vinny and some of our other co-authors, Arjun Dayal and Daniel O'Connor, actually found a substantial and significant gender gap in resident evaluations on the ACGME milestones, particularly in PGY3. And so Vinny and her team basically approached me and said, is there any way that you could sort of leverage the qualitative comments that are attached to these numerical evaluations to help us see if we can understand better, like, what's going on and what's, like, producing this really substantial and important gap where women are lagging behind men in the third year of residency? And so, you know, from my perspective, this was a super fascinating case where we essentially know that there's gender inequality, that inequality based on the quantitative data, which was longitudinal and across, I think, seven different institutions. It was robust to a ton of important controls. So essentially, we had a really good sense that this gap was real. And so that allowed us to have, like, sort of more confidence in the qualitative data, knowing that we didn't really have to go in asking whether or not there's a gap. We went in knowing that women are lagging behind men in terms of these evaluations. The other thing that's really unique and fascinating about this data is that it allows us to essentially get into the heads of the attending physicians when they were doing these numerical evaluations. The evaluations were actually on a daily basis through this app that the attending physicians were using. And so they usually did it at the end of the day, but they could do it whenever they wanted. So throughout a shift, or I should say at the end of the shift, since I guess some shifts are overnight. And so as they would provide this numerical feedback, the attending physicians would often just jot a note to the resident about why they were receiving the feedback they were receiving. And sometimes the feedback was very like clear cut, you know, like very related to the milestone that was being evaluated. But other times the comments were, you know, much broader about how the resident was doing or picked up other things like the residents, you know, like comments about personality and whatnot. So anyways, this study was essentially an analysis of, we had to do a subset of the comments because in total we have over 13,000 comments, which is an incredibly huge amount of data. And so we did, we picked one of the places, essentially, there were two reasons we chose this hospital, which we don't name, we just use a pseudonym and call it University Hospital, excuse me. For one, this was a very large, site. So they had a lot of comments and they were also providing a lot of comments per resident. So it gave us a better sort of more comprehensive view of what the residents' daily experiences were like. And then the other really interesting thing was that this particular site was using both private comments and public comments. So the private comments were not visible to the resident and only went to the other attending physicians in the hospital. So we had this opportunity to compare at times the private versus the public comment. Now, most of the comments were public, but at least having some insight to the private world was sort of interesting. So the site had 47 residents and 67 faculty members. There were more men on the faculty and on among the residents than women, which is exactly what we would expect. And so that was kind of, I think, the setup of this study.
Okay, so tell us what you found, because I imagine that there are going to be some very interesting gendered comments. And I'm super interested in this idea of public comments versus private comments and what people will say when they know somebody else is reading it. This goes back to some knowledge we had previously. If somebody had to sign an evaluation and it wasn't anonymous, what would they actually say? So I'm really super interested into what you guys found.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'll talk a little bit about the public versus private, although I'll tell you that really, honestly, a lot of the comments are really harsh and that surprised us. The public comments are, you know, if I think back to my own grad school days, not what I would have wanted to read about myself. but so what we found, I would say there's like sort of two or three big things that we found. The first is, you know, we wanted to start at the beginning and basically say, what is it that makes an ideal emergency medicine resident? That's a really important place to start, right? We have the milestones to guide us, but also just what emerged out of the data. And what we found was that, first of all, the ideal emergency medicine resident has to possess a lot of traits that are also associated stereotypically with masculinity. And that's not based on our own perceptions, but actually based on prior research that says these traits are stereotypically masculine. And so like things that includes are things like confidence and leadership and being autonomous. Now, also based on past research, that finding suggests that it's probably going to be easier for men to embody those traits and then also easier for men to be perceived by others as successfully embodying those traits. So then it wasn't surprising that we did find evidence that women had a much harder time living up to those traits, particularly consistently across evaluations. So like just one example of that, 50% of the male residents in our sample received no negative comments about their personalities, okay? And that's compared to only 23% of female residents. So, and that's only three female residents who managed that. And on the other hand, like 62% of female residents were actually criticized multiple times for lacking sort of valued emergency medicine personality traits. So we're not talking about procedural skills or diagnostic skills, but just their personalities. And that's compared to 36% of male residents that received criticism for their personality. So, you know, I think in emergency medicine, particularly during residency, it's fairly common based on the comments that we've read to like sometimes have, you know, to struggle, with confidence or leadership. Like these are things that residents are supposed to develop through residency. So it's not surprising that that some of these negative personality comments were happening, but the vast difference between male and female residents is a little bit concerning. And then related to that, I think actually our most important finding is that we found that when male residents were struggling with living up to some aspect of these ideals in emergency medicine, they actually received nice, consistent feedback from different attending physicians like, you know, hey, you know, I see you're struggling with confidence. You need to work on this. Whereas women, in general, the female residents rarely received consistent feedback from different attending physicians. And instead, what we saw was that one attending physician would praise a woman for like doing well, particularly around issues of like leadership and autonomy and independence. And then she would just be criticized by another attending physician for either being too independent or too, you know, not open to feedback enough, or not confident or independent enough. And so it was really telling, these like mixed messages that women were receiving. You know, of course, we're not observing the residents in the ED. So we can't say for sure that this isn't, you know, maybe it is true that women on some levels struggle more, but I think it also introduces the possibility that there's a perception issue where female residents are, you know, being perceived differently on average than male residents. So yeah, that's kind of our findings just in general.
There is so much to like, and I use the word unpack, and I mean that in the most genuine way. So I think that I want to kind of hold all that stuff that we're processing, which is a lot of the objective data, the ability to take the social science research and actually look at the gendered evaluations and the consequences of that, which requires somebody like you as a partner, right? But kind of go back a little bit to the beginning of why emergency medicine? What is it about our specialty that allowed you guys to do this? And then what was the, you kind of mentioned, and I think I'll throw this to Vinny for a second, as far as like a transition goes, but what was it about the first study that you guys did, and certainly the same team at Chicago, that showed you that emergency medicine evaluations would be gendered? Because I think that anchoring, and then we can have kind of an active conversation about what to do next. So Vinny, why emergency medicine, and where did you guys come up with this idea?
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that one of the things that we really were benefited by were our two medical students who had actually helped develop this app. So they're very entrepreneurial. And while they were in college, they recognized that there was an importance for evaluations while they were working in an emergency department as a scribe. They actually saw that the program director was struggling to get the faculty to do these evaluations, and we were all moving in GME to the milestones, which many of you guys have heard about. And how are we going to collect milestones data from busy emergency department faculty while they were, we know they're directly supervising. I mean, EM has a strong culture of supervision. You guys are there overnight. But how could we fit that into your busy workday so that it didn't feel like you were doing all this stuff later? And so one of the things that they did was develop this really beautiful real-time interface app, which was quick and easy. And when they got to medical school, they came and met with me and said, hey, what do you think about this? And I helped them adapt it to the milestones and said, this is great. And they were working with several emergency departments and then expanded. And it made sense for emergency medicine because, as you know, knowing a lot of emergency medicine physicians, I think you're natural early adopters and, you know, not afraid of using tech. And something that makes your job easier that you believe in, like real-time feedback and evaluation for the residents, it was very easy to get the adoption needed for this work. And so that is...
Oh, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second. I want everyone to hear this because this is actually part of the reason why I think that emergency medicine will move forward on the gender issue faster than most other specialties. We are innovative, adaptive, and we believe that this all we're the right source for this.
Exactly.
So the answer why you use us is because we're the perfect specimen.
Right. So it was not just that, you know, the method of measurement would be easily picked up and adopted. I mean, that was sort of, it really set up this beautiful natural experiment because I should tell you, I'll be very frank. They came to me and said, hey, you know, I direct the research programs here for the medical students. And they came to me and said, hey, we have this treasure trove of data. Are there some questions we could ask? And actually, I should say the team was mostly male at the time. And so you know, and I initially looked at this and I said, well, you know, we haven't validated the milestones. How do people progress through training? I mean, the gender thing was sort of, you know, the data spoke to us about the gender issues. And so I certainly, you know, I'm not an emergency medicine provider, but I am a woman. And so what stuck out to me was in all these modeling and things that we were looking at, the effect of being female, you know, on your milestone performance was larger than anything else, you know? And so that was really what led me to believe, you know, we really needed to focus there. And so when we were we had all this data, and, you know, as anyone who collects big data, you're like, what's the story here? And when you take a look at it, the story really that leaped out of that page was that women were at a disadvantage. And what's interesting about that early paper is women started out either equal or ahead. And so, and that actually is consistent with some of the data that I was collecting from our simulations around orientation locally. And so I was really, you know, dumbfounded to find that they were falling off the curve, you know, and they were ending up with milestone scores by PGY3 that were lower, consistently lower by 3 to 4 months of training, which is a huge effect size. And so, so that's what really led to the initial paper around gender. But then when we published that paper, the big question was why? And so that's where we were left off.
Right. So the paper you're talking about, and that'll be in the show notes, is comparison of male versus female resident milestone evaluations by faculty during emergency medicine resident training. And just to give everyone you looked at like 7 or 8 residencies, right, across the board over years. And for those of you out there, right, that aren't familiar with the milestones or emergency medicine training in general, I think that just to give you a little background, because my mom listens to this podcast, and my sister, and they're not even doctors, is, and Jenny's mom too. Hi, Sue. So anyway, so, you know, the milestones are these metrics that we use to grade residents. And, you know, there are 23 milestones in emergency medicine that were set up and they were adopted by the ACGME, and they are supposed to be our metrics for success. And what you guys basically found was that although in the first year, women residents were better or ahead of men in 7 of the milestones, right, out of the 23. By the third year on the evaluation system that was out there, women residents were far behind male residents across the board. And so for us in emergency medicine, you know, the reason why, if I remember correctly, you used this was not just because you had the app and the medical students, but because we were the first specialty to adopt the milestones 100% across our specialty.
Yes. And there were two reasons. One, you were the first ones to really adopt. And second, it is really just impressive that this was 33,000 real-time direct observation encounters. And so in my field, you know, as a hospitalist, I'm doing a lot of direct observation, but I'm also, internal medicine tends to sit at their desk afterwards with their coffee and then fill out the evaluation at the end of the month. But emergency medicine, you guys are on the cutting edge of doing these real-time direct observations during the shift. And so that is really interesting from the literature that I've understood from Anna around bias, because it's sort of those like implicit bias tests. You're doing quick observations in the field. And in those quick observations, we are getting into the attending's head of what did they actually think very close to the time of the performance of that resident. And so that was really unparalleled to have access to that many direct observations from emergency medicine physicians. And so, so it was not just the scope of work and the early adoption, but it was also this really, the way you guys work really lent itself well to study bias, because that is kind of, you know, similar to how you guys are treating patients as you come into the door, you know, what's the first impression? Similar, this is sort of, we were able to collect first impressions of a resident in real time, which is really unusual in other places in medical education. And now what's interesting is after these papers have come out, a lot of other people are like, hey, can we use the app? Can we try it in medicine? And here we are trying it in medicine. And so we may start to be able to see some of this pan out and take a look at the other specialties in this way.
So now I had a question on that. If regarding the real time evaluations, do you think that exaggerates bias more, or under exaggerates bias more?
I think it might have a tendency to exaggerate bias. In a lot of the biased literature, you know, especially the implicit, assessment test bias, you're under a time pressure, and under time pressure, that's when biases right. tend to come out. And so, so again, these are unconscious biases. I want to be very, very, as you guys know, we're not alleging like there is like a conscious bias in people's minds. Perhaps there is, we've certainly met people like that. But by and large, the literature around gender and what we're finding is it's probably more unconscious. And, you know, the examples that Anna gave, I mean, it's so sobering to read about. I think about the resident Emma, you know, who one attending says she's progressing well, appropriate confidence. The next attending says she should be more assertive and say she's the team leader. The next attending says she argues too much with the attending and is overconfident. And so what you see there right. is that because we all have a certain gender stereotype of women as not being sort of a team leader and not being able to be assertive, and the stereotypical EM qualities of being a great team leader are predominantly masculine traits, you see this disparity coming out that kind of harkens to what Sheryl Sandberg has described and others as the likability penalty. And so women who are promoted to leadership positions suffer more when they have to be team leaders and make unpopular decisions because they're going against that stereotype of women should be likable. And so I think that the examples and, you know, having somebody like Anna and her team really look at it with more of a sociological perspective and not being colored by the, you know, the all of the things we bring to our resident evaluations, was able to draw that out in a way that I don't think that I could have seen. And so so that's one of the beauties of the partnership was not just the approach rigorously, but literally a fresh set of eyes just focusing on the gender question from the sociological perspective. They could see things that we could not, even though we saw it in the numbers, but couldn't explain it.
So can I ask you a question? So there's so many things that I want to think about as far as like future data, and more importantly, like what to do with this as emergency medicine doctors, as women, as people that are affecting, you know, gender equity in our field. So I wonder if you look at like other specialties that are female dominant, but not necessarily the gender of the decision making or the personality trait is more feminine and not as masculine as emergency medicine.
Yes.
And I don't even know, I guess I would assume that would be pediatrics to start in this right. kind of warm and inviting and holistic approach. Do men in pediatrics get penalized for being too decisive, too assertive, not necessarily as compassionate or as, and do you know that? I mean,
so I do know some of the literature. I haven't looked at that, but we're set up to look at that. I will say, in predominantly female specialties, the literature really comes from nursing. You know, most nurses are women, the stereotype is caring. But in many of those fields, like nurses, social work, and even some of the specialties that you highlight, what's described is that when a man enters that field, they get sort of disproportionate praise. And so it's sort of that you can't win, you know? And so, so I think the story is still not, you know, we still need some more data there, but at least from my nursing colleagues, as well as some of the gender data around I think in my own field in medical education, there's a lot of women in medical education, we're nurturers, teachers, but you often see the acceleration of, especially in leadership positions, I'm specifically talking about leadership, even to be a nursing leader, or a medical education leader, or leader in whatever your predominant field is, the same stereotypical female traits don't work there, and then the leadership carries. And so, so I think that may come out and, you know, there are papers that talk about, for example, we've seen the Jenna studies on gender and physician outcomes. And there's certainly that's leveraged off of literature on patient satisfaction, being more effective communicators and listeners. So I think there is something there that patients are recognizing and others are recognizing. But when we look at the leadership gap, we're still left with, why are there no female leaders? And I would posit that it's not because women don't want to lead. A lot of, and that needs to be dispelled. A lot of it is because the women that do lead often face these very harsh likability penalties, and women who want to lead also are judged by these sort of stereotypical traits. And if they don't, and while they're trying to calibrate how they fit in, they are like Emma, and they pay either, if you, it's you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And that is the real challenge there.
So I think that that's actually one of the biggest take home points I want people to take home from this exact, from this podcast, is to read your paper, because I think that this paper spells out, it makes sense to us, right? It's not as much about p-values and, you know, scores. It's really about conversations. Absolutely, right? Yeah. And what do you do if you're a female resident? If we don't know that female residents are getting such mixed messages. Like, and I think back to my own training, right? So I'm a relatively assertive personality who would love doing emergency medicine, who got more comments on my personality ever than my medical knowledge. Mm-hmm. On my, now I wish that was about me, and it may still be about me. Like, I don't know, but I was always either too friendly, too assertive, not friendly enough, not formal enough, not professional enough. I could go on and on and on. It's not that I'm harboring ill will. I just have it on my wall and I throw darts at it every day. But I think about it, right? And if that's, I always thought that was me. And I was like, I think it contributed to some element of my resilience, right? Yeah. And some of it's that I've accepted that this is my personality and this is why I'm tough to deal with. And I wonder if that's the messaging that's happening across the board to women residents, you know, in every specialty, but even in emergency medicine is my field. That's super, that's new knowledge to me, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's really powerful, because you wonder, you know, because the other thing I want to say about the evaluations, and when you made this comment about the public evaluations and how harsh they were before, and I think Anna said it, was when I was a residency director, I was impressed at how brutal people were willing to be in a paper evaluation.
Yeah.
Right. And some of it was anonymous and some of it wasn't, but it was so, like, we had to have workshops on,
right,
how to speak to people when you're evaluating them. Because some of the words are, here you have somebody who's been training for their entire life to be a doctor, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, unfit for medicine, afraid they're going to kill somebody. Like, and no, those, these dramatic statements aren't necessarily true. And they're, I mean, it's personal. So what do we do? I guess my question to you, Vinny, is what do we do as a physician, right? So Anna's not a physician. She just, she's helping us prove the point, but
yes,
what do we do in the process now as evaluators,
absolutely,
as we're understanding this data, to say, how do I know this person's not getting mixed messages? How do I know I'm part of the majority of this person's evaluation?
Absolutely. Well, the first step is awareness. And so I think that's why the research is important, is, you know, putting it out there, having a podcast, so that program directors and faculty and residents are aware, well, maybe we need to look at a timeout. And, you know, certainly in medical education, not every evaluation is helpful, and not every evaluation was filled out by somebody who's experienced an evaluation. We all know that. And so what's our job as leaders in terms of selecting the right type of feedback and promoting the right type of feedback? And there's certainly lots of workshops on feedback, but I do want to draw attention to specific interventions on gender. And so Molly Carnes, who's a researcher, has done some great work in multiple departments across STEM fields to really highlight gender bias and the need to address it. That's shown great outcomes where women feel more valued and have escalated to leadership positions. So it's not that nothing can be done. There are studies out there showing something can be done. I think that the reason our study is important and powerful is that those studies all look at faculty, and there's a lot around faculty and breaking the glass ceiling, and what do you do when you get to be a woman leader? How do you help bring forward women? But this study is, these studies, this collection of studies are saying that this starts so early in our training, and that's where we need to direct our efforts, because the damage has been done by the time they get to faculty.
So I think that this is, Jenny, I want to just, I think it's time to tie this up, but what do you think as a young faculty member who just finished residency training, is it, you think it's going to inform your, the way that you evaluate residents or anything?
100%. And I think it's going to change the way I, as a faculty member, talk to other faculty members about how we assess our residents. I mean, I can even sit back. I'm sitting here thinking about the most recent core competency committee meeting I was at, and how I think I saw some of this happening, like a little bit of the Emma story, where it's like they would get one message one day and the next message the next day, kind of throwing them back and forth. And what exactly is real and what's not real and what's biased and what's not biased? I'm like, I have so many things to think about.
So good. So I think we're going to leave this here for now. Like I said, the paper is going to be in the show notes, and I really would encourage everyone to read it. If anybody's interested in doing a journal club on it, email us, and we'll help maybe even pose 3 or 4 questions, I think, from FemineM to moderate the idea of questions for a journal club. Or if anyone wants to invite Vinny or me or Jenny to speak at Grand Rounds over the next few months or so, I think this is the kind of paper we could do as a journal club the night before, because I do think it's a really deep, interesting, and culturally relevant topic that we can have good, engaged conversations on. So, Dr. Aurora, Dr. Mueller, thank you so much for joining us on the FemineM podcast.
Thank you. It's been great.
And I will say that you are invited back again to discuss this paper and more, because it's really important to us that physicians and scientists are doing the research that proves the concepts that we've been feeling for so long. And without the data, that's why we talk about papers in this podcast. Without the data, we're never going to get anywhere. So that's it. So Jenny, do you want to do any announcements while we're done, while we're on the way out?
Yeah, 2 quick announcements. Remember that our fixed tickets are going to be coming available. First set of tickets available Sunday, March 4th at noon, New York Eastern time. So get yourself ready to buy tickets. And then watch for the next Fix 17 podcast. It's going to be Dr. Kathy Statz talking about women in emergency medicine. It's a great talk.
Women in EMS.
I'm sorry, women in EMS.
Well, I mean, they are. She is an emergency medicine, but I think
all of them are in emergency medicine. Women in EMS, specifically in EMS. So
well,
take a listen.
So with that, we'll bid you adieu for the next few days, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.